First of all, I want to thank the committee. I know you guys worked your butts off, and you guys did a really good job, and I appreciate you. Thank you. I also want to reach out to some of the people that are here in this room. Some of you have gone out of your way to make me feel welcome, and we've sat down, and we've talked, and we've shared, and I appreciate you, too. I want to thank Chris for being my host and my very special friend, Josh. I freaking love you, man. All right. Let's do this. My name's Rhonda Wright, and I'm a cocaine addict. My sobriety date is 9/5/02, so I've been sober for 16 years. Now, I am one of those addicts that talks about what it was like before we came into these rooms, because it's in that insanity and that stuff that we go through out there on the street. That's the stuff that the newcomer relates to. See, they don't relate to the solution. And at 16 years sober, if the newcomer's going to be able to relate to me, I have to go where they're at, right? And so I go to there, and I hope to bring them into recovery with my story, right? So I start my story out back when I was about 15 years old, you know, but I do want to say that long before I took a drink or a drug, long before I ever put a drink or a drug into my system, I was suffering from a spiritual malady, right? And I didn't know it was a spiritual malady. All I knew that I was out there on the street, and I was full of anger, fear, resentment, and I didn't have the coping skills to deal with that, right? And I thought I was a piece of shit, and I thought I didn't matter, and I thought the people in my life were better off without me in their life, right? And nothing I could do, nothing I could find outside of me to put inside of me could make me feel okay, right? The whole time I was growing up as a child, all I ever wanted to be was okay, and I never got to do that as a child. I never got to, right? And so I'm out there on the street, and I do like a lot of us do when we're on the street, right? I go to this person's house, I go to that person's house, I do the little couch surfing thing. Eventually, I find myself sleeping on the side of people's houses or in the back of people's trucks. You know, and like I said, I was looking for something outside of me to make me feel okay, so I start chasing guys, because this guy's going to fix me, right? And so I start chasing the guys, and I chase them to the bars, and then the bars close. So where do you go? You got to go to these pool halls, right? Because pool halls stay open all night. So I start chasing them into the pool halls. And the people in these pool halls, they let me hang out with them. And I thought that meant they liked me, right? Because, you see, I needed so desperately to fit in. I wanted to feel like I was a part of something. I wanted to feel like I mattered to somebody. And they let me hang out with them, and I thought that meant they liked me. So I became absolutely willing to do whatever they were doing to continue to hang out. And see, these people stayed up all night, and they got loaded. So I got loaded. And when I got high, something happened, right? It was that thing. It was that thing that I've been wanting my whole life. I thought I was okay. So this is how you get okay. Now I know how to be okay. I just got to stay high, right? And so I set off on that course. You know, almost 10 years later, I'm really good at getting high. I got all the connections, and I got all the hookups, and I finally got to that place where you think you're the shit, right? Right, so I got there. So I think I'm the shit, right? And I'm at the top of my game, and I start hemorrhaging. And I have to get air vac to the hospital because I lost so much blood. And I get to the hospital, and the doctor in the emergency room tells me I'm 5.5 months pregnant and the baby's trying to abort. And I didn't know that I was pregnant, right? So now this doctor in the emergency room is the very first person in almost 10 years of using mentioned I might have a drug problem. He asked me if I was an addict. And I remember being completely offended by the fact that he would even say such a thing to me. Of course I'm not an addict. I only get high when I want to, not because I have to. An addict's got to get high. I don't got to. He says, all right, when was the last time you didn't want to? Shit. I got nothing. I couldn't think of a single time in almost 10 years that I didn't need to be high, right? So now I'm in this emergency room, and they're telling me if they can stop the bleeding, I'm going to have a baby. I ain't trying to have no baby. And that means this dude that I'm just hanging out with, now he's going to be my old man? I ain't trying to have no man. I ain't trying to do none of that, right? I'm just trying to do enough dope to be okay with myself, right? So anyway, I'm in the hospital for about a month and a half. A month and a half later, I get out of the hospital, and I got a family. I got an old man. I got a kid. And I go back to this guy's house, and I don't know about you guys, but I get in relationships that I don't care to be in, right? They're uncomfortable. They're sometimes abusive. And we stay in that shit anyway, right? And I stay in these relationships that I don't want to be in, and I hold on to them with claw marks like I can't live without them, like I got to have them, you know what I mean? And I'm completely irresponsible. So I get pregnant again. And then I get pregnant again. And now I got 3 kids with some guy I don't even like. Right? So I got these 3 kids, right? And they're flipping crying all the time. And they, like, want me to feed them and stuff. And I'm supposed to change their diapers. And dude wants to come home to a clean house. I'm supposed to cook them dinner. I'm supposed to care about them. And I don't. I just don't, right? So I'm trying to do enough dope to be okay with all of that. But there ain't enough dope to be okay with all of that, right? There ain't, right? And so I know that sounded really shitty the way I referred to my kids, but I do want to let you know I am one of those addicts that came into these rooms with all kind of guilt and shame, especially for the stuff that I drug my kids through, right? The kind of guilt and shame that when you try to talk about it, it chokes you and you can't get it out. And you can't believe you were a part of that. And when did it get that bad? And how did I cross that line, right? That's the kind of stuff I came in here with. And the difference is I've done the work that's outlined in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, so I don't walk with guilt and shame anymore. I don't have to. And neither do you, right? So anyway, I got these flipping kids. I got this dude. I can't stand life. I'm trying to do enough dope to be okay, and I can't get okay anymore, right? I can't get okay anymore. My buzz is gone. And so I do like I always do. I'm out. Right? I get up and I walk out of that three-bedroom townhouse and I don't go back, right? So I don't know if any of you guys are familiar with Phoenix, but it's probably like that in a lot of the states you go to. I go to the south side, right? Just south of the tracks, right? And I go down there south of the tracks because there's this old empty lot behind this truck stop, right? And I go into this empty lot and I build an 8x12 box out of pallets. And I'm starting to feel okay again, right? Because you see, it doesn't matter that I don't have a change of clothes, or I don't have any food, or I don't have any money. It doesn't matter that I just left three little babies for their daddy to take care of, you see? All that matters is I can get as high as I want whenever I want, and I don't have to care about anybody, and I don't have to let anybody care about me. So you see, I'm starting to feel okay again. My buzz is back, right? Now the girls that work Buckeye and Van Buren, you know what I'm talking about, right? They work in that street. And the guys from over at the rescue mission, we're all kicking it, and life is good, right? And then one day this car rolls up to the lot, and it's my kids' grandma, and she has all three of my kids, and she says their daddy went to jail, and they're yours. So she left me those babies that day. So now I got three little kids, and I'm living in a flipping box in South Phoenix, right? So I don't know about you guys, but there's two ways I learned how to deal with life. I either smoke enough dope to forget about it, or I smoke enough dope to figure it out. And that's how I deal with everything. Because see, the dope is the solution. It's the solution to happy, sad, mad, glad. It doesn't matter, right? If I want to celebrate, I get high. If I'm pissed off at somebody, I get high. It is the solution for me, right? So I smoked enough dope to figure this out. I trade the guy a couple lots down. He lets me run an extension cord out of his breaker box across one lot into the lot that I'm in. I trade somebody else for a refrigerator. We throw some hot dogs and water in there. The kids are cool. They think we're camping, right? Because you see, your kids will let you drag them through anything. All they want to do is be where you are. They just want to share your life, man. That's all they want. And my kids are cool because they're with mommy and that's all that matters to them. And it doesn't cross my mind that my kids shouldn't be living this way because I'm selfish and I'm self-centered, right? And all that crosses my mind is I didn't think I could be a mommy. Look at me go. I got this, right? Yeah. So I'm going to fast forward through the time I lived in that lot, but I want to let you guys know I lived in that lot for 8 years. Okay, I wasn't homeless for the weekend. I didn't have a bad month. My best thinking said that that was okay. And if it's okay, we don't do anything about changing it, right? You know how we lie to ourselves so we can continue to use the way we like to use? How we tell ourselves, it is what it is, I'm doing the best I can, the world doesn't treat me right, you know? And then like a week turns into a month and a month turns into a year and 8 years later, I'm still there lying to myself and I don't even know, right? I don't even freaking know, right? So as time moves on though, while I'm living there in the lot, somewhere in my addiction, I got really fond of trash. Like, I like dumpsters, and I like alleys, and I can't stand it when people throw their garbage away in them black bags, because I can't see what's in it, and I gotta freaking know, you know what I mean? Like, for reals, I'm 16 years sober, I still can't drive by a bunch of black bags on the curb without pumping my brakes. I'm like, what is it? Is that clothes? What's in there, right? So anyway, I really like trash. So one day I leave my kids with the prostitutes from the truck stop and I go down my little trash route because we all get a little route, you know what I mean? So I go down my little trash route and I turn down this alley. And I couldn't believe it. Somebody had thrown away only one thing in this world that would make my life better than what it was. A toilet. That's exactly what I needed. Well, a homeless person don't need a toilet, right? And so like I hurry off to get my shopping cart and I'm trying to get back to it before somebody else gets it because you know everybody else wants it, right? I rolled back up in there and it was still there and I was like, hell yeah, score! You know what I mean? And so I load the toilet into my shopping cart with all my other fine collectibles. You know what I'm talking about, right? Because you see the lady pushing the shopping cart down the road and her shit's always stacked up really high and things be hanging off the side of the cart and stuff. But for the grace of God, there go I. You see, that's me. That lady pushing the shopping cart down the road that you don't want to make eye contact with, that's me. That's where my addiction takes me. And let me tell you about me at this point. I weighed 80 pounds. That's 65 pounds less than I weigh now, right? I got 7 or 8 broken teeth in the front of my mouth. I got pick sores all over my body. I got bald spots all over my head where I tweaked on my head, and I hadn't showered in months. And that's where my addiction takes me. And the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about it, right? It tells me in the big book, my addict's life becomes so normal that I can't differentiate the true from the false, right? Obviously, I can't differentiate true from false if I think living with my kids in a box in a field is aight. Or I think finding a toilet in an alley is a score. Obviously, I can't tell the difference anymore, right? And so anyway, I take this shopping cart, right, and I push it up into the lot, and the kids see the toilet, and they're all like, yay, they're all super stoked because now we got a toilet, right? And I take this toilet to the backside of the property because on the backside of the property, there's a storm drain. And we put this toilet on top of the storm drain. We hook up the water illegally, and we stick a hose in the back of the toilet, and it flushed. I was like, hell yes, right? So I built a box around the toilet. Now I got the box that we're sleeping in. I got the box with the toilet. And in my delusion, we're living the dream, right? And we got it going on, right? If somebody had said poor Rhonda, I thought they were crazy because in my delusion, there was nothing missing from my life. That's how powerful this disease is, right? When all of that becomes okay. You know what I mean? So as time moves on, though, I start getting really sick. Like bad sick. Like I don't got enough energy to stand up on my own anymore, remember? And I told you how attractive I was. Well, I also had this thing growing out the side of my neck. Looked like a little head sitting on my shoulder, right? And the girls from the street or the guys from the mission would come over and they're like, dude, what is that? And they're pointing at this thing on my neck, and I'm like, ah, it's nothing. It's nothing. Just give me the pipe. I don't know what it is, right? And they're like, yeah, go ahead. No, we don't want more. You can have it. Mm-mm. See, that's how scary it looked. They ain't showered in a month either, and they don't want to touch it because I touched it, right? But then somebody came over that actually cared about me that I'd known since I was a child, and he says, man, Rhonda, honey, you're dying. You need to go to the hospital. And I manipulate the situation because we get really good at manipulation while we're out there, right? And I play that mommy card. And I tell him I can't. I got kids to take care of. He goes, no, honey, you don't get it. You're freaking dying. You need to go to the hospital. And I'm like, I can't. I got kids to take care of. Who's going to take care of my kids if I don't, right? We got nobody. There's nobody else but me. He says, check it out. I'll bail their daddy out of jail and their daddy can take them if you'll go to the hospital for me. And I'm like, daddy will come get these kids. Go get them. I'll do whatever you want. So they bail daddy out of jail. Daddy takes the kids. I go to the hospital and they diagnose me with lymphoma cancer. I have a malignant tumor in my neck. I have cancer cells clustered under my left arm, the right side of my groin, and mastocytes on the diaphragm surrounding my heart and lungs because I'd let it spread through my body. And I was devastated. You know, it broke my heart and it took my breath away. And I'd love to be able to tell you it broke my heart because my kids weren't going to have a mommy or because there's so many wonderful things in life that I'm not going to get a chance to do now. But see, that's not it. I'm a drug addict. What broke my heart is they told me I'm going to die in this hospital. That means I'm never going to get high again. You see, I can't do that. See, they don't understand, right? Because they just gave me some really effed up news and I need to get loaded. I need my solution, right? So I can't stay here. They don't understand that though, right? Now, I thought about my kids later. But if you suffer from the disease of addiction, the drugs and alcohol come first, right? And I bet if you look into your own experience, you see those times where you got high and you didn't want to, right? Or those times where you had something really important that you were supposed to do, I don't know, something like Christmas, right? And this year's going to be different and we're going to spend the night together and it's going to be cool and I'm going to bring presents and I promise it's going to be different. And I show up at New Year's with an excuse, right? Or, I don't know, like my little girl's birthday. You know, my grandma gives her a birthday party because mama's not capable, right? And nobody's allowed to cut the cake till mommy gets there. But my little girl falls asleep beside her birthday cake because mommy don't show up, right? That's the kind of stuff my guilt and shame's rooted in, right? But in the doctor's opinion in the book, it tells me at some point in my using, I passed through a point where I've lost the ability to choose whether I get high or not, right? And this usually happens long before I'm aware of it, right? So I'm in the hospital. I'm thinking I'm choosing dope over my family. I'm thinking I'm choosing that, right? And I didn't know then. I didn't know that I'd cross some imaginary line, right? I had no idea. And that's some of the stuff my guilt and shame was rooted in, that when I came into these rooms and I read the book, that the doctor's opinion helped me see that I didn't choose that lifestyle over my family, that I'm sick. And I lost the ability to choose long before I was aware of it, right? So anyway, at the time, I'm in the hospital. I reacted really well to chemotherapy. They told me they could install this catheter thing in my chest and let me go home and spend some time with my family before I passed, right? And I didn't tell them I lived in a box because I didn't think they'd let me go home, you know what I mean? So we made a deal. The deal is I'm going to take these chemos by mouth every single day, all day long, 33 pills a day, blah, blah, blah. And then I'm going to come back every Monday, and they're going to pump me full of 6 hours worth of chemotherapy, and we're going to do this for as long as we can do this, and that's the deal, right? So I get back, and my kids' hearts are breaking because their mommy's dying, and they don't have the coping skills to deal with that, right? And my kids' dad, who's in a different relationship than me, that man loves me. And he doesn't know what he's going to do or how he's going to take care of these kids, right? And nobody knows what to say, and nobody knows how to act, and everybody's sad, and everybody's angry, and we're all freaking tripping on each other, right? We're all freaking tripping because we don't know how to do this. I don't know how to do this, right? So I need my solution. And the problem is I can't get to my solution with them stuck to me, right? Because, see, they won't let me out of their sight, not even for a minute, because they're afraid that if I leave that I'm going to die and they'll never see me again, right? So they're all stuck to me, and I can't freaking stand it. I can't freaking stand it. I need to get high, and I can't get high with them stuck to me, so they have to go. Because, see, everything that gets between me and my dope goes away, right? So I manipulate the situation. I tell their daddy, I don't want my kids to see me die. You need to take them, and you need to leave. And I make them all go away. All they want to do is spend as much time with their mommy as they can before their mommy dies, and I can't give them that. I can't give them that, right? So I make them all go away. Now, for a little while, I was really good about making it to chemotherapy. For a little while. But if you're an addict like me, only one thing makes you feel better. The dope. Right? So I started mixing meth with chemo. Right? I wasn't doing it to get high or anything. I was just doing it so I didn't get sick. Or at least that's the lie I'm selling myself now. Right? And the problem with this thinking is once I start, I can't stop. And I can't control the amount that I use. And I don't care what I got to give up to get it because nothing else has value. Right? Nothing else has value. So the problem with this is I come out of the hospital after giving chemotherapy and I start getting high. I keep getting high all the way up until I have to go back to chemotherapy again. And then they can't give me stable enough to give me chemotherapy. So they tell me to come back tomorrow, right? But you see, tomorrow I don't make it. Because tomorrow I was on my way to chemotherapy and I saw this really cool trash pile. And I got saving my life in one hand and going through the garbage in the other. And I'll spend 6 hours in the garbage and never make it to chemotherapy. And pretty soon chemotherapy got in the way of my using, so I quit going, right? I still had this catheter thing hanging out of my chest, this main artery heart valve that's supposed to be flushed and accessed on a regular basis, right? And I don't go back for 4 years, right? I wasn't supposed to live for 4 years, and I don't know until I get into recovery how all that went down, and I'll share it with you in just a minute, but at the time I was expecting to die any day, so it didn't matter, right? So now I'm back in the box, I push my family away, and since I look so attractive, all 80 sucked up pounds of me got a new boyfriend, right? And he moved out of his house into the box with me, right? Because he's not sick either, huh? Because we know how to pick them, don't we? Yeah. So he moves out of his house into the box with me, and you know how it is when it's all brand new, right? We're all hooking up and hanging out, and it's all really cool, right? So I get pregnant again, and then I get pregnant again, and now I got 2 more kids with this guy. And he's a lot like the first guy, right? But he goes on to DOC, and he don't get back out. So now I'm back in the box. I got 2 little kids, but I've done this before, and I know how to do it. Plus, see, I got this new hustle. I got this catheter thing hanging out of my chest, and that proves that I'm a victim. And people should feel sorry for me and give me stuff. Because we know how to play the victim, don't we? Right. So I get me a travel trailer. And I pull this travel trailer up into the lot, right? And me and the kids move out of the box into the travel trailer. And I rented out the box, right? It was a really nice box. I'm a tweaker. You don't live somewhere for a while without fixing it, right? So I'd fix that shit. Before I moved out of that box, it had blue carpeting, a piece of white sectional mirror wall, French door, and an AC unit. I had the baddest box on the block, right? So I rented box out to dude, and me and the kids are in the, we'd moved into the travel trailer, and then the sheriff department swoops in on us and raids the box. We got a full-on drug task force, ninjas with hoods marching in 2x2, breaking off into pairs, right? Got the helicopter all lit up like a football field, street shut down for a box in a field, right? Now, since the property is technically mine, everything on the property is technically mine, including the meth lab that they found in the box. So I go to jail. Child Protective Services takes my children. And I don't know if you guys have ever gone to jail before, But I bet if you did, you made the same decision I made when you got there. I'm going to quit now. I'm done. This is the last time I'm going to end up in here, right? And I meant that. When I said that, I meant that. I meant that with everything I have in me. I don't know I crossed some imaginary line. I don't know that I can't stop. And when I said it, I meant it, right? I freaking meant it with everything I had in me. I'm done. This is the last time I'm going to end up in here, right? Now, I'm in there for a while. Eventually, I'm able to work a deal with pretrial services and bond and get out pending sentencing, right? And so the book calls it a firm resolution. I made a firm resolution on one side of the fence not to get loaded anymore. But see, on the other side of the fence, though, as I'm getting in the car, I swallow a rock, I hit the pipe, I never made it out of the jail parking lot. I never made it out of the jail parking lot. I had all the good reason in the world not to get loaded, right? And it never ceases to amaze me how much of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous is in my life before I ever knew the big book existed. Because right then, right there, in that moment, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about me. It tells me I can't bring to my consciousness with sufficient force the memory of suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. I am without defense. There's no mental defense against the next time I get loaded. It doesn't matter what I know about me. It doesn't matter if I'm a mommy. It doesn't matter if I have important stuff to do. None of that matters, see? There's this peculiar mental blank spot, right? And I don't think about that stuff. I got out, I got high, because that's just what I do, right? I didn't try to talk myself into it or try to talk myself out of it. I just got high, because it's just what I do, right? And so, I don't know if you guys have ever stayed up all night before, but I have, and that night I sure did. You know what I'm talking about, right? So, all right. So if you've stayed up all night, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You know how we have a moment of clarity when the sun comes up? Right? The sun comes up and we're like, oh, shit. I wasn't going to do that again. Right? I got stuff to do today. I got important stuff to do today. Right? And so like I'm tripping. I'm like, oh, my God, I got all this stuff to do today. I got to meet with pretrial services and a lawyer and child protective services. And I got to do some outpatient treatment thing at some tarot's place. And I got to drop a UA. Oh, shit, I got to drop a UA. I am high. Right? It's like, oh my God, what am I going to do? I know what I'll do. I know. I'll just take a little nap. All right? I'll take a little nap and they won't be able to tell I'm tweaking, right? They won't be able to tell. I'll go take a shower somewhere, put on a bunch of makeup. They can't tell, right? I got this, right? And then I'll tell them, yeah, I was on that bus on the way to drop that UA thing you wanted, but the bus broke down. It's not my fault. I was going to drop a UA, but the bus broke down. So see, I'm fabricating bullshit is what I'm doing. And I'm making up lies, right? And the only person believing any of that shit that I'm trying to sell, it's me, right? The only person believing that is me, right? So trust and believe if you're still playing the game. The people sitting next to you, they know. The people that love you, they know, right? And I know that because it's a fact of my experience. I thought I was selling that shit. And the only person I was lying to was me, right? But in the course of doing all that stuff, I had to do this outpatient treatment thing at this tarot's place, right? And in this outpatient treatment group, there was one person in there completely okay with not getting high. What is that about? How do you get okay with that, right? I'm freaking tripping on this lady, right? How do you get okay with not getting high? Because see, when they took away my drugs and they took that shit away from me, I am not that person that got sick and tired of being sick and tired. That ain't me. Everybody else decided I needed to quit, not me, right? And so when they took that away, they took away the only thing in my life that ever made me feel okay. So I don't believe that I'm ever going to be okay again, right? I'm never going to have friends. I'm never going to have fun. Sex is going to suck. Nothing is ever going to be okay again. How do I get okay with that? Tell me how to be okay with that. And she says she goes to these 12-step meetings. I'm like, what the hell is a 12-step meeting? And she says, after this group, I'll take you over this place and show you. I'm like, all right, let's do it. So after group, we went over to this Alano Club place, right? And we walked in there, and I see that they have meetings all day long. Started like 7 in the morning, went to almost 10 o'clock at night, right? And I walked into the meeting that was happening at that time, and I didn't know this then, but that was my very first Cocaine Anonymous meeting, right? And I walked into that meeting, and there was about 40 or 50 people in that meeting. And back then, they still smoked in rooms, right? So the whole room's all filled with smoke, right? And people are all hugging each other and smiling and laughing and acting like they're friends and stuff. And you know they ain't really friends because people like that don't hang out, right? So I'm tripping on these people for reals. Like, so I go all the way to the back of the room where we all go when we're brand new, right? And I'm sitting back there listening to them all lie to each other. I've been sober 3 years. I've been sober 5 years. Liars. Nobody laughs about having to stay sober for 5 freaking years, right? That shit ain't funny, you know what I mean? So I am tripping on these people, you know? But I learned something from that very first meeting, right? From the very first meeting, I learned something. For that 1 hour, I didn't get loaded. This is my new plan, right? They have meetings here all day long, right? I'm going to walk my happy back butt up here in the morning, and I'm going to sit in the back of one of these rooms, right? And I'm going to sit here, and I'm going to go whatever A's up, A, CMA, whatever A, I'm in it, right? I'm going to sit in the back of this room, and I'm going to sit here all day long, and I'm going to go to meeting after meeting after meeting, because I didn't know this then like I know this now, but I was safe there, right? I didn't know that. I was just doing it. I had just enough willingness to get my butt there, right? And I didn't even know why, but I kept going back, right? And that CA meeting became my first home group, right? And I took a service commitment to that CA group, right? But in the course of going back and going to meeting after meeting after meeting, there was a lady talking at this meeting one day, right? And she's talking about how she gave up her multi-million dollar home for prescription drug problem, right? And I'm like, lady, please, I live in a box in South Phoenix. You want to come stay the night with me? Freaking up your wine in about a month. Who has a multi-million dollar home anyway, right? So I'm just dissecting this poor lady, you know what I mean? But after going to meeting after meeting after meeting, for about 3 weeks, I hear that same lady talking. And I'm absolutely floored by what I hear this time. Because after 3 weeks of meetings, what I hear this time is that she gave up her home, and she gave up her husband, and she gave up her children to use. And now she can't stop and she's afraid. You see, what I heard that day was that she's just like me. What? She's like me? So now I'm starting to listen different. And I'm starting to talk a little bit. And I'm starting to ask a few questions, and they're all telling me the same thing. They're all telling me I need to get a big book. And I said, I don't got no money for no big book. So they gave me one. Right? And then they told me I need to get a sponsor. I'm like, what the hell is a sponsor? And they gave me one. Right? And then this sponsor lady tells me I need to read the book like my life depends on it, because it does. And I'm thinking, I don't know how that book's going to get between me and my dope, but I'll read it. Right? And I go back and I start reading this book. And in the very front of the book, there's a chapter called The Doctor's Opinion, right? In The Doctor's Opinion, it talks about my addiction as a disease. It says it manifests in my body in the form of an allergy. What does that even freaking mean, right? Well, an allergy is just an abnormal reaction to something when you come in contact with it, right? If you're allergic to strawberries and you come in contact with strawberries, you're going to have an abnormal reaction the person sitting next to you won't have. See, the person next to you can eat strawberries all day long and you can't. And that's what the doctor's trying to help us understand, right? If we suffer from the disease of addiction, what we have is an allergy. And if we take drugs or alcohol into our system in any form at all, pills, pop, popper, heroin, tequila, whatever your thing is, we take it into our system, what we have is an abnormal reaction, right? And that abnormal reaction is an allergic reaction. The allergic reaction is called the phenomenon of craving. And this sets us apart. It makes us different than those other people, right? Those other people can go to the bar and have a few drinks and go back to their happy little lives. And I can't. And some people can go to the concert on the weekends, snort a line, smoke a bowl, be back to work on Monday. Yeah, I won't do it like that. Because you see, once I start, I don't stop. And I can't control the amount that I use. And I don't care what I got to give up to get it, because nothing else has value, right? And so when I read this in the book, though, I'm like, oh, I need to call my sponsor. Hey, sponsor lady, you know that book you told me to read? Yeah, there's a chapter in it called The Doctor's Opinion. And in The Doctor's Opinion, it says my addiction's a disease, so it's not my fault. It's not my fault I do all that dumb shit. I got that damn disease thing your book be talking about. She laughed at me, too, and told me to keep reading it. I'm like, all right, I'm going to read it like I want to read it now, because I'm going to find a bunch more excuses for my bad behavior, right? And I go back and I start reading this book, right? And then it comes time to go through my first step. And I always share my first step when I share, because my first step is why I'm still here today, see? My first step says I'm powerless over my addiction and my life is unmanageable. And although you may have heard some examples of powerlessness in my story, I didn't see it that way, you see? I thought I had control of all that stuff, right? I thought I had control of all of that. See, my powerless for me didn't happen when I was out there on the street. See, because in my delusion, when I had drugs, I had power. Right? My powerlessness happened to me right here in these rooms when I was about 60 days sober and I didn't have drugs or alcohol to deal with me. Right? And I was sitting in a meeting and it wasn't the topic of the meeting or anything that was going on in my life. It's just right then, right there in that moment, I realized inside of myself what being an addict meant to me. See, the book tells me I need to fully concede to my innermost self that I am an addict. And this is my first step in recovery, right? And that's what happened that day. I realized inside of myself what being an addict meant to me. It meant that I was going to die. It meant that I was going to die because I couldn't stop. And I couldn't control it. And I couldn't moderate. So that meant that I was going to use again. And that meant that I was going to die. And there was nothing I could do about it. There was nothing I could do about it, right? So in that moment, I was absolutely powerless, right? The book tells us we come into this room with the desperation of the drowning man. If you are truly drowning, you're afraid you're going to die, right? And if you're truly drowning and you're afraid you're going to die and somebody throws you a life preserver, what do you do with it? You grab a hold of that shit, right? Because nobody really wants to die. We don't want to drown. We just don't want to live that way anymore, right? I just can't live that way anymore. Right? And I'm absolutely grateful for the people that were in these rooms when I got here because they told me I didn't have to have a plan. I didn't have to have it all figured out. Nobody told me, just do the next right thing. If somebody had told me that, what the hell? If I knew how to do the next right thing, I wouldn't freaking be here. Right? They told me all I had to do was hold on and let them bring me to shore. Right? So that's what I did. And that's what they did. And today I can stand on that shore on my own 2 feet. And it's absolutely my responsibility to be standing on that shore throwing out the next life preserver. Because that's what we do here, right? And the second half of that step was just as powerful, you see. The second half of that step said my life was unmanageable, right? And although some of that other stuff sounds like some unmanageability, I don't believe for me that that's what you're talking about in that first step. See, on page 52 in the big book, there's a little paragraph. It references the bedevilment. And in that paragraph, it says we are full of fear. We are unhappy. We can't seem to make a living, right? It says we don't know how to have personal relationships. I don't know how to love anybody. And I don't know how to let anybody love me. It also says I'm a prey to misery and depression, right? What does that even mean, right? Well, you see, I found out what it means to me. You see, I keep everybody this far away. And I don't really let anybody in, you know, because I built this wall to protect myself. Right? So nobody can hurt me. And you know what I'm talking about because y'all got a wall. Right? So I built this wall to protect myself. And the problem with building this wall is now what I've done. You hear him talk about it in this room. He talks about that bondage of self. Right? And so what I've done here is I built my own prison. Right? And every one of those bricks is a different kind of fear. I'm not pretty enough. I'm not skinny enough. My kids are better off without me. I'm an effing felon. Why try? You've been a piece of shit your whole life. You know what your take plays, right? So I built this wall out of fear, and what I've done is I've built my own prison, and I'm trapped, right? I'm trapped behind this damn wall with the one person who thinks the least of me, myself, right? And the tape keeps playing. Your kids are better off without you. Why try? You're an effing felon. And it just keeps playing, right? And so I'm trapped behind this wall, and I feel like nobody cares, right? I feel like nobody, I don't matter to anybody, right? But nobody can care for me even if they want to because I don't let them in behind my wall, right? So I'm freaking lonely, right? And I'm angry. And I'm sad. And it's cold, and it's dark, and it's ugly, and the freaking tape keeps playing, man. I'm a piece of shit. I've always been a piece of shit. I'm never going to be more than a piece of shit, right? And I need it to stop. I need this to stop. So I reach for something to make it stop. And I get loaded, or I hurt myself. So you see, that's the stuff. That's the stuff that's going to take us back out. And that's the stuff that's going to kill us if we don't learn how to work on it. The shit that goes on between our head and our heart. Right? It's not that outside stuff. I spent my whole life looking for an outside solution to my inside problem. That shit don't work. Right? That outside stuff, them's consequences. Right? You do drugs and alcohol long enough, you're going to have some consequences. Right? What happens when they shut off the electric? We light a candle. Right? What happens when we wreck our car? We steal a bike. We can roll with consequences. That stuff don't take us back out. It's the inside stuff that we don't know how to manage. And that's the stuff that the rest of the steps are outlined to help you work on. So that when this goes off, it don't take you back out, right? And see, there's something else I want to share with you. When I was about 10 months sober, I went back to the doctor, right? Because I still had a catheter hanging out of my chest, right? And I rolled back up in there, and they thought I died. That's why, you know, I didn't come back, you know? And I walk in, I'm like, hey, and they're like, whoa, and I'm like, what? And they're all tripping, you know what I mean? And so... Yeah, And so everybody's all freaking tripping and everything. But for the next 3 weeks, right, I got all this crazy testing going on. I got bone marrow biopsies and lymph node biopsies and blood work and all this crazy testing, right? And then my test results come back. And my cancer was gone. Okay? My cancer was gone. Now, it was gone like it was never there. Gone. Right? Now, I truly believe that I didn't die those times that I OD'd. And one night, my friend got shot in the head and the chest in my box trying to defend me. And it wasn't me. Right? And the reason cancer didn't kill me is because I'm supposed to be standing here right now in this moment talking to you. And as much as I tried to get in the way of God's plan, it's not my plan. You see, God saved my ass for a reason. Because my experience can help somebody else. And guess what? He saved you all for the same reason. You see, you all got a story to tell. And your story don't got to be like mine. Whatever your experience is, whatever you bring to the table today, there's somebody sitting in the back of the room somewhere going through some shit that you've already walked through. And if you don't share, they may never know how to get through it. They may never know how. So the fact that you're sitting here tonight, that's a freaking gift, right? Y'all know somebody that's died from this. And here you sit. You see, that's a gift. What do you want to do with your gift? It's okay to dream again, right? Because see, like when I was out there on the street, I was completely okay with being nobody going nowhere. But Cocaine Anonymous allowed me to dream again. And Cocaine Anonymous taught me how to brush my teeth, brush my hair, get a job, take a shower whether I needed it or not. Right? Cocaine Anonymous taught me that. You know what I mean? And so they taught me it was okay to dream again. And when I talk about dreaming, I talk about dreaming big. Right? Remember in the beginning when I talked about stumbling around out there in the spiritual malady? Well, I came in these rooms and I've done enough work to do. I have enough spiritual experiences to have a spiritual awakening, right? And let me tell you what that looks like for me today, right? I raised all five of my kids as a single mom in sobriety, right? I have my five kids and I got 11 grandkids, right? I drive a new car. I've had the same job for 13 years. And that's the outside shit. See, the inside stuff's even better. I'm really comfortable in my own skin today, right? And when I walk through the door at the end of the day, little grandbabies run up to me and they're like, "Grandma, Grandma." And they grab a hold of me and I walk in the kitchen like this with them stuck to me. You know how you do, right? And so I'll sit down at the table because, see, my kids will fix me dinner because when I come home from work, they have dinner ready for me, right? And me and my family, we sit at the dinner table together 4 or 5 nights a week and we eat dinner. And we're not just at the same place at the same time. We're sharing our lives, right? We're sharing our lives. That's freaking huge, right? And then I'll listen to them start to put the babies to bed or start to clean the kitchen, right? And then I get up and I go in my room and I sit on the end of my bed and I talk to my God. And no matter what happens in my life today, drama, trauma, fear, no matter what, I'm going to lay my head on my pillow tonight and I know that I'm going to be all right. And I know that because my God's got me. And I know that because I talk to him every day, right? And then I get up in the morning, and I sit on the end of my bed, and I talk to my God. And I get to do it again. I get another day to be mommy and grandma and a friend and a sponsee and a sponsor. And when I talk about dreaming big, I mean dream big. I've been absolutely blessed to share the story that I just shared with you all over the freaking world, right? All over the world, like I got to speak in Sweden and I got to speak in London and from Phoenix to New York, and they put me up on some 34th floor, some fancy hotel in Manhattan, right? And I'm all tripping because I'm a junkie from South Phoenix that lived in a box, right? And they're all like taking me to some Broadway show and shit, dude. And I'm like, for real? And I'm like at a Broadway show. And I'm like, oh my God. And sometimes I'm just brought to tears. Because I don't know how a junkie like me gets to live the life that I've lived today, right? How does that happen? Well, let me tell you how it happens. I had the same home group for 15 years, right? When that home group went dark, I started another one, right? I go to 5 or 6 meetings a week still. I have H&I commitments in the jail, and I have for over 10 years. I've always had a service commitment to my home group, right? I never have less than 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12 girls somewhere between steps 1 and steps 12, right? I continue to do at 16 years what I did that got me sober, right? I didn't come into this room, get what I need, and go out there and try to live life. Right? But I don't live my life in these rooms either. You know what I mean? And so I've been absolutely blessed. And I know that sometimes we feel like we screwed up our life so bad that we ended up here. Right? But this isn't where we ended up. This is where we start. Right? This is where we start. And if you didn't start yesterday, you can start today. Right? Yeah. Cocaine Anonymous gave me a life greater than I ever dreamed that I could live, right? Don't cheat yourself short of that, right? The solution that I found is in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And if you want what we have, and what we have is freedom, right? And if you want that, my suggestion to you is to get in the book. Thank you for letting me share. Thank you.